Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to ID the Future. This is Rob Crowther at Discovery Institute in Seattle, Washington. And I am joined today by someone our regular listeners are probably very familiar with, Casey Luskin, who is the Program Officer for Public Policy and Legal Affairs here at the Center for Science and Culture. How does it feel to be on the other side of the microphone today, Casey?
Oh, now I see how difficult it is to do these interviews. So,
the reason we're here with Casey today is to talk a little bit about an article that he wrote and which was published in the University of St. Thomas Journal of Law and Public Policy. It's called The Constitutionality and Pedagogical Benefits of Teaching Evolution Scientifically. So why don't you give us a little bit of an overview of the article, Casey, and maybe if you could just sort of boil down your three main points, what those would be in the article.
Well, this is a fun article to research, and I started off researching what a lot of science education authorities have said about what some of the problems are facing American science education, which many of them say that American science education is currently in a crisis. There's two main problems. The first one is that we're basically not inspiring sufficient numbers of students to actually pursue careers in science. And the second problem is that we're not teaching students how to think like scientists. We're basically teaching them what to think and just giving them sort of rote memorization of facts instead of teaching them how to think and how to grapple with new scientific questions. And that's important because even if you don't become a scientist, if you're going to be a citizen who is scientifically literate, you have to be able to interpret and understand scientific data and address scientific questions and form your own opinions. And so those are the two main problems facing American science education today. And the solution that is lauded basically by all of the major science authorities is very simple. It's that we need to use more inquiry-based science education when we teach students science. And what that means is that we basically teach students about scientific habits of mind, things like how to use critical thinking, how to critically evaluate the evidence, how to have skepticism, how to look at a question and evaluate the data and weigh the evidence and come to your own conclusion. And this sort of language is found throughout the prescriptions of leading science education authorities. So that's really the first main point of my article. The second main point of my article is that there is really no legal barrier to teaching scientific criticisms of evolution. Basically, to apply the kind of approach of teaching evolution that I just explained is being at least supported in name by many science education authorities, to teach critical thinking, to teach students to weigh different explanations and weigh competing ideas and hypotheses. To apply that kind of approach to evolution is completely legal. And actually, the US Supreme Court, in the 1987 case, Edwards versus Aguillard, essentially said that it is permissible to teach scientific critiques of prevailing scientific theories. And the final point of my article is to talk about the fact that there are papers, mainstream scientific papers from the peer-reviewed scientific literature that discuss scientific challenges to some of the main lines of evidence that are used to support evolution in the classroom. And so you have science education authorities agreeing with legal authorities, with peer-reviewed scientific papers, that there is a need and there is science to teach that challenges Darwinian evolution. And so my argument basically is that if you're going to teach and you're going to treat evolution like a science, you've got to teach it critically in this fashion.
Well, that's very interesting, and I'm intrigued because when we're discussing how to teach evolution, we're hearing all the time that students shouldn't be, you know, critically analyzing it, that they should just be taking what's fed to them and accepting it. And yet in other areas, it seems like the authorities are starting to say, well, we should be doing critical analysis in this inquiry-based method in other areas of science. So who are some of these science education authorities, I guess, that you cite in your paper supporting this inquiry method? And what do they say about it?
Well, I mean, first of all, I want to say that I completely agree. We should be applying the inquiry method of teaching science in all areas of science. Studies across the board show that this is the best way to teach science, to allow students to use critical thinking and to evaluate and weigh competing hypotheses and to come up with, you know, to form their own opinions. That is far and away the best way to teach science. And as I said earlier, and as you just mentioned in the question, this is supported by many science education authorities. The National Science Education Standards, which is published by the National Research Council that's affiliated with the National Academy of Sciences, basically says that students need to use critical and logical thinking and even consider alternative explanations when studying science. The College Board, which issues AP exams and the SAT exam, they have come out with a whole set of science standards, which again encourage students to use critical and logical thinking to engage in scientific critique and to consider alternative explanations. Same goes for the American Association for the Advancement of Science, or AAAS, which has a project called Project 2061, which is supposed to improve American science education by the next time Halley's Comet returns in the year 2061. And this project is trying to recommend all kinds of beneficial new science standards, and they say the same exact thing, that students need to use critical and logical thinking and to consider alternative hypotheses and weigh those hypotheses. Interestingly, the National Academy of Sciences is coming out with a new framework for teaching science, and it's just coming out in the summer of, or they're considering this for public comment right now in the summer of 2010, and it says the same thing, that students need to be learning to use scientific critique and to consider different views when studying science. And this is all great. The problem is that when it comes to teaching evolution, they basically throw all of these beneficial ways of teaching science out, and they say that evolution should be taught as fact, 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 and they effectively want to single out evolution as the only topic which should be insulated from any real critical analysis in the classroom. So while we're often accused of singling out evolution as the only topic that should be criticized in the classroom, that's certainly not true. I support using the inquiry method all throughout teaching science. What's interesting is that it's the sort of the Darwin lobby that singles out evolution as the only topic which should not be subjected to the inquiry method and which should not be subjected to critical thinking. When you see the standards that they actually recommend when it comes to evolution, it's all about teaching evolution without any questions or any critical dissent whatsoever.
Yes, it is a very dogmatic approach to education when it comes to teaching evolution in general. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about what are some of the more egregious examples of this sort of dogmatic approach to evolution education, and maybe focus especially in the state science standards, which kind of are the overruling thing that teachers are teaching to.
Well, again, the point here to keep in mind as we talk about this is that science education authorities, they praise the use of the inquiry method when teaching science across the board. They say that students should use critical thinking and logical analysis and consider alternative competing hypotheses. But then when it comes to evolution, they basically jettison all of those ideas and they switch back to a dogmatic approach. Some of the state science standards that really do this quite poorly would be, I would say, California, New York, New Jersey, and the state of Florida. And I don't have all these memorized. You can read my paper if you want to get some of the direct language, but one of the most recent examples comes from the state of Florida, where basically the Darwin lobby took over and had a coup, essentially, and took over the writing process of Florida's science standards in 2008. So this directly reflects the kind of mode of teaching evolution that the Darwin lobby and the science education authorities want to have taught. And the standards in Florida basically say that evolution is a fundamental concept in biology, that natural selection is the driving force behind evolution, that there are no dissenting ideas, there is no room whatsoever for questioning Darwinian evolution. Evolution is to be taught as fact and as the unifying theory of all biology, and there really is no opportunity or prescription whatsoever in the standards for students to question any of those ideas. And I mean, not every state is this bad. I mean, that's the good news. There are a few states that teach evolution well, but some of these states, and Florida being the one from most recent memory, really go out of their way to teach evolution as dogmatically as possible and to remove any opportunity for students to actually question evolution.
I know that you mentioned that some states do it correctly, and I would guess that one of those is Louisiana. Maybe you could just briefly compare and contrast Louisiana with Florida.
Sure. Well, what's great about Louisiana is they don't actually require teachers to say anything negative against evolution. What they do is they protect the academic freedom of teachers to have freedom of speech to teach these issues objectively if they choose to do that. So it's very much a permissive and a defensive and protective policy that says to teachers that if you want to teach both the evidence for and against evolution and other controversial scientific theories as well, their statewide law does not simply apply to evolution, it applies to science in general, that if you're going to teach these theories objectively, looking at both the evidence for and against, that we're going to stand behind you, and you're not going to lose your job for doing that. And there have been teachers that have lost their jobs or been transferred to teach PE, no offense to PE teachers, but most biology teachers want to teach biology. And so things have happened to these teachers when they've taught, when they've questioned evolution. So yeah, that's basically the difference, is that Louisiana gives teachers academic freedom to teach these subjects objectively, whereas states like Florida, New York, California, New Jersey, and a variety of other states as well, actually, they clearly have an agenda. They're not teaching students how to think, they're teaching them what to think. Their agenda is not to educate, it's to indoctrinate in a specific viewpoint on evolution, and they do not want students being exposed to other views. Essentially, and I don't use this word lightly, but this is really what's going on. They are trying to censor from students any scientific views that challenge evolution. That's exactly what they want to do.
Well, what do science education theorists say about that? Is this the best way to teach science or teach evolution?
Again, it's really amazing. That is most certainly not what science education authorities are saying. They are saying that when we teach science, we should teach students to weigh hypotheses, to consider evidence for and against, to critically analyze the data. There was just an article that came out in the journal Science by a science education theorist from Stanford named Jonathan Osborne. And his article says that students should learn about the evidence that both supports and does not support the scientific concepts being discussed in the classroom. And I don't see any reason why that kind of a philosophy should not be applied to evolution. What's interesting is that actually Jonathan Osborne is on this panel that's creating a new science framework for public education for the National Academy of Sciences. And if you look in that framework, the draft that is online right now, it says that students should use critique and evaluate different ideas and engage in critical thinking when learning science. It says that in the general areas about how to teach science generally. But then when you get to the specific areas that deal with evolution, you're back to dogmatism. And evolution is called the unifying idea behind biology, and students are taught that the fossil record unequivocally supports evolution, that the DNA data unequivocally supports common descent, that natural selection is the driving force behind evolution, without any mention about of all of the leading scientists, even in peer-reviewed scientific literature, that are now starting to be skeptical of natural selection and who are questioning, basically, the methods that are used to construct many phylogenetic trees and are saying that the tree of life hypothesis is facing many problems. You don't see any of this in these standards. Students are not allowed to question any of these ideas. They're taught the tree of life hypothesis or natural selection and random mutation being the driving force behind evolution. They're taught all of this as if it's unadulterated fact. So you don't have to believe me. Go read these standards for yourselves, which I document in this paper, and you'll see that while they praise critical thinking, when it comes to evolution, they basically throw those ideas out the window.
That's amazing. Let's talk a little bit about the law. Can you tell us briefly how Discovery Institute feels that this issue should be taught, and what policy options are out there for implementing the kind of approach that Discovery recommends?
Sure. Well, obviously, Discovery Institute is well known as being one of the biggest supporters out there of intelligent design. And so when I talk to people, and I have these conversations on a regular basis, part of my job here at Discovery is to actually advise teachers and school board members. What I tell them is that we actually do not support mandating the teaching of intelligent design or pushing ID into the curriculum. And the reason is because our priority with intelligent design has really always been to develop it as a science and to see this debate be a scientific debate rather than a political one. And when intelligent design gets pushed into the curriculum, it takes the debate out of the scientific realm and puts it into the political realm. And what that ends up doing is it ends up politicizing the issue, and it increases the amount of persecution that pro-ID scientists and other faculty face in the academy. It really hinders their ability to do pro-ID research, and it hinders the ability of ID to advance as a science. And because our priority is to see ID become a successful scientific theory, we don't want it to be pushed into public schools because that will work against the ability of ID's success in the long term, basically. So I think that actually pushing ID into the curriculum could be very damaging to the long-term ability of ID to gain a fair hearing in the scientific community. So instead, it's not that we want schools to therefore accept the status quo. We don't think that the way, this dogmatic way that evolution is usually taught is a good thing. It doesn't teach students the facts about biology. It doesn't teach them to think like scientists. and it does not do anything to diffuse the community controversy that's caused by teaching this very controversial idea in a dogmatic fashion. And so what we feel is the common ground solution to teaching evolution is to teach students about both the scientific evidence for and against evolutioners. We like to say to teach the strengths and the weaknesses of evolution and let students use this foundational topic in science as a way to engage in critical thinking and learn to practice scientific habits of mind. Quite frankly, I think that if you are just, no matter what you believe, whether you are a strong ardent evolutionist or if you're a Darwin skeptic or whatever your background and beliefs happen to be, we all agree that the question of where we came from is one of the most foundational questions that all humans wrestle with. Even if you approach it from a completely non-religious standpoint, this is a very important question. I think it's absolutely unconscionable from a purely humanistic perspective. It's unconscionable to only teach students one particular view on this foundational question of humanity and to censor other views from students and not give them access to all the best scientific viewpoints and allow them to make up their own minds. If you're teaching a subject like where we came from in a dogmatic fashion from a purely humanistic point of view, I find that to be an absolutely unconscionable thing to do. We should be giving students access to the best scientific arguments on all sides of this issue and allow them to weigh and critically analyze the data and make up their own minds. And it just so happens that this approach actually solves those crises that are facing American science education that we talked about at the beginning of this interview. It gets students more interested in science, and it teaches them to think like scientists. Matter of fact, I can't think of a better way to squash student interest in science than to tell them that one of these core questions of where we came from has already essentially basically been answered, and that there's really no groundbreaking work to do. It's just a bunch of filling in a few gaps, little tiny minuscule gaps here and there. What else would turn students off from science? How about teaching them that there is a vigorous scientific, or not just teaching them, but acknowledging the fact that there are vigorous scientific debates over some of the core tenets of Darwinian evolution, and a lot of what's in their textbook is being challenged in the peer-reviewed scientific literature. I think that will get students interested in science and make them want to become better scientists.
I also know the answer to this question, I think, but I'm going to ask it because I'm curious to hear currently. How do the critics respond to these positions? I'm sure they're not exactly thrilled or excited in the Darwin lobby about this sort of an objective, critical analysis approach to science education.
We have a wonderful thing in the United States. It's called the First Amendment. And what it says is we have religious freedom, that the government cannot tell people what they should believe religiously, and that the government cannot abridge freedom of religion, and the government cannot promote or endorse any particular religious viewpoint. This has been one of the success points that has made America great, that we're no longer fighting over religion, and we can fight over other things instead. But, you know, basically, the First Amendment, which preserves the separation of church and state, is a very, very good thing. So what the critics of our position do is they take the First Amendment and they abuse it by turning it into a tool for censorship. They basically try to relabel legitimate scientific criticisms of evolution that are coming from the peer-reviewed scientific literature as religion. And then they claim that because this is religion, even though it's really not, that therefore it cannot be taught in the science classroom and it needs to be censored from students. So really what they're doing is they're taking a good thing, the First Amendment's requirements of separation of church and state, and they're abusing it by turning it into a tool to censor certain scientific viewpoints from students. And it's very convenient because we all agree that, you know, we don't want the science classroom pushing religious views. Nobody that I know of here at Discovery or even major players in this debate disagrees with that. They don't want science pushing religious views. What we think, though, is that the science classroom is a place to learn about different scientific views. And unfortunately, what our critics will do is they'll go around saying that if you just do so much as question Darwinism, that you're therefore promoting creationism, or you're promoting the book of Genesis, or you're promoting a religious viewpoint. I think that Barbara Forrest, who's one of the masters of this relabeling strategy, she has said quite often that any scientific critique of evolution essentially comes down to teaching creationism. And there was this handout that she passed out in Louisiana a couple years ago trying to convince legislators to oppose Louisiana's academic freedom bill. And in about 20 places she said, this bill contains creationist code language. Well, what is creationist code language? To me, this sounds like a total conspiracy theory. Because when you look at what these laws and these policies actually say, they will say things like, this law does not permit the teaching of religion, or this law shall not be construed in any way to allow for the promotion or discrimination for or against any religious viewpoint. They very clearly do not cover or protect the teaching of religion. So what these creationist code language conspiracy theories basically require is that when a law actually says you can't teach a religion, everybody else in the state, all the teachers in the state, actually think that really means teach religion. I mean, it's absolutely ludicrous to think that any court would construe the plain language of law in this fashion, and that a law that says you can't teach religion would actually be used to allow the teaching of religion. So these objections to teaching evolution scientifically are baseless. They're basically contrived arguments that are designed to plan our emotions in order to convince people to actually endorse censorship of scientific views that would challenge the Darwinian consensus.
Well, that's fascinating. I know in your article you get into a lot of the scientific controversies and the actual challenges to Darwinian evolution, but we don't have time for that today, so we'll do that in another podcast, and we can go into talking about some of the actual science from the peer-reviewed literature itself that challenges Darwinism. I want to thank Casey for being with us on ID the Future today. His article, if you're interested, is titled "The Constitutionality and Pedagogical Benefits of Teaching Evolution Scientifically," and it was published in the University of St. Thomas Journal of Law and Public Policy, Volume 6. And I know that there are copies or places on the Discovery Institute website and at intelligentdesign.org that you could find this article. Thanks a lot, Casey.
Thank you.
For ID the Future, this is Robert Crowther in Seattle, Washington. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.